There we go. That will wrap it up for our opening segment of Terry's Chocolate Orange. Yeah, it's funny. There we go. Well, that wraps up another week, another episode here at the Nigel's Cider Extravaganza. Who is Nigel? And if you enjoy our podcast and want to help, please spread the word about the Neutral Cider Hotel. Why not? Shut up. Tell your friends about it and encourage them to listen. You can also follow, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. Oh, you fuckers. You do it. You do it. You do it. Fuck off. You do it. Go on. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Neutral Cider Hotel podcast. I'm your host, Gabe Cook, and coming up a little bit later on the show, we'll be doing a chat and tasting with fine cider distributor, Mr. Felix Nash. And finally, we'll be taking on your listener questions. But first, well, the Google alerts that I get and grant every week to alerting us as to, you know, what's big in the world of cider every week. I had something that popped up around apparently it dates back to the 13th century, the custom of the Paignton pudding. Now, Paignton is a town in South Devon, and the baking of a giant, ruddy, great big pudding.
So, hold on. Yeah. Can I just ask, can we verify mm-hmm. and determine what style of pudding? Is it a meat pudding? Like, you know, we have black pudding up here in Scotland, or is it a sweet cake pudding?
I believe it's more of the sweet rather than the savory variation. From the story that I'm about to tell you, that would seem to be the case, because this tradition, it still happens to this day of creating. It's just a giant. It's just a ridiculously large pudding that gets taken into the town and everybody kind of tucks into it. And the most legendary event happened in 1859 when in celebration and commemoration of the finishing of the railway line at Paignton, which is a port, they decided to do a giant pudding, one of the biggest they'd ever done, to feed 850 of the poor parishioners. It's very nice, but also to feed the 300 navvies who had built this railway line. And apparently, everything was going fine. There was a first course, and there was a second course, and everybody was sat down and having a jolly good time. And then this 1.5 ton pudding got wheeled out, 8 foot tall and 5 feet wide.
You'd lose your shit, wouldn't you?
They did because they had been given, and I quote, an unlimited supply of Paignton cider the course. And when the sight of this giant pudding came in, they ripped it apart and had the largest food fight that's ever been recorded in the history of South Devon.
What year was this again? Sorry?
1859.
Back when they were swilling with bumbo. Jesus.
Yeah, that was just, you betcha.
Painful, wasn't it?
And you know, that South Devon around sort of Paignton was a really, really big cider area. It was was taken out through the ports there. You still got the likes of Hunt's down there, and Yard is a really small producer at sort of Stoke Gabriel and in that area. It was once upon a time this really big area. The Newton Abbott Cider Bar is in that area too. It's a testament to this tradition. So it just made me giggle that everybody got cidered up and smashed a pudding, basically.
Unlimited cider is just not—it's not a thing that should happen, is it? Like, limit your cider. Drink responsibly. Yeah,
that's a warning to anyone who's planning their own pie unveiling, pudding unveiling.
Yeah, choose wisely your beverage of choice to accompany that. So there we go. That's my little insight. So how about you, my Angel Delight, Martin Goodwin Sharman?
How's
your week?
Yeah, really good. I did, and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I've just been drinking cider and getting ready for tomorrow. A little pre warm up for it. I'm table on an international cider challenge. So I'm going to be waking up bright and early after this and drinking more cider. So just getting the muscle trained this week.
Bravo. Well, I did mine this morning, so I've been drinking since 9 o'clock this morning, God. And it's not morning now, listeners. I know you can't tell, but it's been a long day. But you know, it's all good. It's all good.
I didn't get asked this year, so thanks, Gabe.
He's not the chair.
I am not the chair this. I am not the chair this year, my dear friend.
It's Finchy, isn't it? It's a Finchy.
Mm. Maybe he assumed you weren't able to attend.
Oh. So, Grant, my little sugar plum fairy, what's your week been like?
It's been pretty good. Pretty good. I wanted to mention a new cider release. I listened to a recent episode, just catching up with past episodes, and listened to Gidon talking about his pog cider, and I felt that we were a little bit harsh. I felt that we were a little bit hard on him.
Gidon,
the spotted dick of the cider world, is the pog.
and I thought, and you know, it's he's donating money to charities.
Oh, did we slag it off and he's doing it for charity?
Yep.
Well, yeah, he told us.
That's right. Well, Martin, you went as far to say, oh, we've all been in lockdown. maybe fuck off, I don't know. But anyway, well, it's going towards a kind of a charity, or it's going towards helping the restaurant and hospitality industry. Mm. It's the charity Brighter Times is the name of the cider. And it's POG for anyone, I guess, outside the US, that would be passion fruit, orange, and guava juice added to a cider. And so you can understand why we maybe weren't that enamored with the idea. But yeah, I thought I think it's only right that we give them an extra wee plug. So
absolutely,
The hour and a half wasn't enough. So honestly, right now I am drinking the Black Widow, which is the last one, which is blackberries and freshly pressed New York apples, and it's like mad fruity jam. So if his pog is like this kind of quality, super fruit forward and easy drinking, then yeah, it's easy work to give money to charity, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if I say utilize a number of times this evening as well. All right, that's it for our opening segment of Terry's Chocolate Orange. thank you. Now let's see what's happening in the news. And now, here at the NutriCider Hotel, it's time for this week's news. And we've got a special guest. That's right. We are speaking to Alex Metcalf, Learning and Discovery Manager at the Campaign for Real Ale, also known as Camera. Welcome, Alex, to the hotel.
Thank you for having me. It's amazing to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We always like having new guests, especially in the news section. This is great.
Yeah, we're really adding to this news bit. Like, I'm surprised Tom Oliver isn't coming in next.
I know. Well,
he might just turn up.
Yeah, he just sort of hangs around the foyer quite a lot, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
He might just barge in like I did earlier.
That's all right. Yeah. Breaking down the door. I want a drink. Come on, let me in. Alex, it is it's cider month currently for Camera. Tell us a little bit about what that means and what activities have been and will be continuing to happen.
So cider month, we celebrate as a campaign in both May and October, following the key really crucial times of year for producers and drinkers alike. This time around in May, we're really pulling the stops out. We've got a whole range of digital assets and ideas for branches and individuals to celebrate, buying from local producers, online events, all sorts of things to get people celebrating and really, really pushing cider at this time. We've got a whole bunch of existing exciting content people can check out across audio, video, all sorts of text resources. The way we slice it, it's for every level of drinker, no matter where they are on their drinker's journey. If you're a beginner, an enthusiast, or a connoisseur, there's got to be something for somebody to get started with. And we really deal with that as well. So we've got people talking about starting out tasting cider, how cider is made, cider terminology, talking about cider, cider history, cider and food pairing, blending and maturation, wassailing, women in working in cider, cider quality, you name it. And we've got it by a whole raft of wonderful, lovely people, including the illustrious Gabe we've got here.
Hello. I was going to say, did Gabe contribute anything to this?
Absolutely. An absolute ton of stuff. There's loads and loads of stuff in there by Gabe.
including Grant, actually, a little, I don't know whether you've seen it. It came out not so long ago, obviously during this month, of a video of my little trip to Scotland from last year. And so featuring visits to the Caledonian Cider Factory. Hello, everybody. And the Navarre Estate and the lovely Max and Penny at Steelhead in Dumfriesshire too. So you can go and get your Scottish fix.
I'm really proud that that's the first in the World of Cider series that we started, the World of Cider series in Scotland.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, that's it done, right? I mean,
that's it. We don't need to go anywhere.
The first one episode. It's a short series.
So we've got all sorts of amazing people, including our Bill Bradshaw, James Finch, aka the Cider Critic, Alison Tafts, who's doing some amazing work for us, particularly on cider. Susanna Mansfield, the illustrious landlady of the Station House in Fram Ferment. So we've got a whole bunch of amazing stuff up already, including things that have come up in Cider Month, the World of Cider, Scotland, kicking off that tour. We've got Bringing Cider to the Table, part one, a really amazing series, three-parter from Bill, featuring Chef Merlin LeBron Johnson at his Somerset restaurant, Ossip. That's a three-parter going across this year. We've got Harriet Mansell and our very own Felix Nash from the Fine Cider Company.
Tonight's guest.
There you go. Nice kind of little segue there. We've got drinking.
There you go. Nice way to interrupt me, Martin. That's what I nice little detour
away from my notes. Level of passive aggressiveness. You will do just fine here, Alex. You could be the fifth musketeer.
I mean, you're sitting there with a real impress me stance, Martin.
Power stance.
Look at you. Like,
sorry. Yes. That wasn't intentional.
You will tell me about cider.
We've got what we've got. We've got drinking regional ciders. So that's East Kent and Eastern styles from Alison Tafts. She's roving around my adopted county. Obviously, we've got the Cider Tourism Guide and Map featuring our very own Grant. We've got a whole
twice I think.
Of other stuff. Yep, we've got it several times. We've got a very important cider lexicon coming from Gabe, connected with his forthcoming book.
Exciting. The title of that book, obviously, is Modern British Cider. Thank you. Thank you.
I asked Ellie, is this a drinking game yet?
Yes.
Oh, blimey. It hasn't been until now, but...
Well, let's do it.
Obviously, God, drink responsibly, everybody.
He's just necked a whole bottle. 750 mil. Wow. He's doing a handstand to get drunk.
Oh, dear.
It's
cider
month! It's
We've got mixed fermentation from Matt Curtis, something for both cider and to keep the beer drinkers happy in this cider month, because we can't lose them.
Amazing.
Coming up in the rest of the month, we've got another piece by guess who?
Oh, ciderologist?
It could be. additional fruits, flavors, and spices, which is going to be a very interesting one.
Oh,
absolutely.
From Gabe. And then, very excitingly, we've got Knowing Cider Styles from Jane Payton and produced by Emma Inch. That's going to be really exciting. Looking forward to that.
Jane Payton, who will be on the show. I think I might be able to give a little sneaky announcement there very soon as well. So you're naming all of the illustrious characters and me. Now, Alex, so obviously there's the huge number of activities, events, and sort of content there, which is the repository of that, presumably, is on the camera website. Give us the where the people need to head to have access to that.
So I've just put a massive banner on my central Camera Learn and Discover webpage. So the quickest way is going to be to go to www.camera.org.uk/learn-discover, and that'll get you to the big banner in the middle of the page, and that'll take you straight into the cider timeline and all the events there, all the resources you can access, including an updated producer's map as well, which has been fully fleshed out at the beginning of this month, which is fantastic.
Amazing. And I know that Scott is going to ask to make sure that camera, for those who are less sure, is C-A-M-R-A, because it's an acronym for the
How
campaign
else would you spell
for
camera?
Real
Air. That's it.
K-J-Y-M-A-R-T-Y-N.
Absolutely. We've also got a really exciting new development. We've got a new CIDR definition, which has been long in the making, which is a much more inclusive and accessible sector-wide definition. And that's going to be having a soft launch and some online activities around that later on in the month as well. Nice. And supporting content as well.
Who is a part of that? Who is all... I mean, I wasn't asked.
just getting in there straight away. Getting there straight away.
Gosh.
To be fair, I did have more to do with the beer definition relaunch. I've been extremely busy getting all this cider stuff ready.
No, that was a genuine question. Who was kind
I
of...
believe it was like people across the sector, stakeholders within camera. There's been a lot of people asked and consulted.
And Alex, I'm sure you can't tell us the exact definition, but can you let us know if you have cleared up the controversy of cider with a Y versus cider with an I?
Come on.
See, commit. I thought I was well-versed in this, but this is completely new on me. I thought this was sort of a nuance of spelling. I didn't actually know anybody ascribes any kind of meaning or, you know.
Well, there is a train of thought that cider with a Y pertains to historically... the cider that was the first press, the finest that made for the manor house, and then this sort of repressed and watered down kind of stuff was the cider the cider for the
so that's
for
what
the masses.
Beer, isn't it?
Was it really?
Yeah, that's it's I've just been reading it. I'm doing the beer with Nat beer school training, and at a certain point when malting techniques evolved, or around the time that malting techniques started to evolve. The people that could afford the best malts, the more expensive to produce, that was it was before they evolved and became more widely available. The manor house in the estates, they made the strongest beers, and the strongest beers were kept on the manor and were for the kind of richer people, and the smaller the beer got and the less alcoholic it went down to the common folk.
And was beer spelled with a Y?
Absolutely.
B-Y-R.
Beer.
All the beer nerds like, finally, they're talking about it.
we managed
to... I'm a mole.
...to hang on this long. So there is that cider with a Y train of thought. Other people Amazing. Think it's just differentiation of spelling. Alex, thank you so much for coming on to the show, for giving us that amazing wealth of information that you obviously have and that is contained within the Learn and Discovery Centre at the Campaign for Real Ale and Cider and Perry on the end. It's brilliant to see that there is so much action, positivity and championing and advocacy for cider and perry as well as real ale. So thank you, and thank you to camera and everybody listening. Do check out those pages, and when the opportunity arises, getting to a camera festival sometime soon and drinking that fantastic range of real ale, real cider and real perry. Okay, that'll do it for the news this week. And a big thanks for Alex for getting us up to speed on all things camera during this May cider month. And, you know, maybe we'll get him in ahead of next next cider month in October, maybe even September. Give you a chance to actually know what the ruddy hell is going on. My bad. And anyway, now it's time for this week's interview with that finest of fellows, Mr. Felix Nash. The Neutral Cider Hotel, it's time for this week's interview, and today we've invited into the hotel a man who has had a telling contribution to artisanal cider's renaissance over the last 5 years or so, establishing his business back in 2014 with a desire to bring exciting ciders to the tables of Michelin-starred restaurants. He has not only achieved this ambition, but he's also heralded a new concept, that of fine cider. Boasting some of the most hyped cider makers in his portfolio, this chap is on the forefront of making cider great again. It gives me great pleasure in welcoming to the show Mr. Felix Nash of the Fine Cider Company.
Hey. Woo.
Hello.
Felix.
Welcome.
Felix. Felix, welcome to the hotel. How are you? How are you today? I've actually already seen you once, haven't I?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I like the subtle Trump reference you put in your introduction as well about making stuff great again. That's a lovely...
Fine cider. It's going to be huge. Yeah.
That wasn't on purpose when I wrote it, and then I saw it and decided to keep it in. But anyway, that's no... let's move on. How are you, Felix?
I'm good. It is lovely to see you again. As you say, we had the... joy of seeing each other earlier today with the Cider Challenge judging.
Oh, you were invited as well.
Interesting. How many people here? Scott, did you fucking do it?
Probably did. Yeah, I'm doing it tomorrow. I'm on the EP table.
Sorry, the judges were talking.
Yeah. Oh, straight in there.
Oh, God. Wowzers. Well, yes, so we had an early start drinking some... drinking some cider. So there we go. But anyway, apart from drinking cider from 9 o'clock in the morning, what is happening with you at the moment? What's interesting? What's dynamic? Tell us a little bit some of the most prescient things right now with fine cider.
I suppose the latest thing was yesterday. I signed a contract on a lease for a new, quite a lot bigger warehouse. So we should be moving in there soon. After the weird old year we've all had where there's been, you know, times where everything looked like it was pretty much set to fall apart through to them being busier than ever. We've done a lot of stuff over the last few months and even the last year to really move things along. And a lot of them are coming together now wonderfully. It's been a lot of planning and such like. And yeah.
You touched a little bit on this last year and... how it went from, you know, potential total meltdown to being the busiest you've ever been. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? The point where I guess nobody really knew what was happening, and then all of a sudden you were the busiest you've ever been. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I guess to almost give you the same kind of answers before, I'm about to have a week off finally after all this, and I'm fascinated to see what actually pops up and actually get a chance to really have a lot of the experiences of, you know, from this time, clarify. But yeah, it all began obviously with the first lockdown, and that sticks in my head as the most intense point. And it was a little bit the case of the gut instinct kicking in, which thank God with cider, basically it's been a struggle for the last 7 years anyway. So I was like, great, we're trained for this. Cool, bring it on. Everybody else is on our level now, let's go.
Carry on as normal.
Bring you all back down into the dirt. Oh yeah, my God.
Yeah. And that began with that real swing about to trying to survive, trying to keep cider being sold for our makers, keep that flowing, trying to get a balance between volume and what sales could be possible, which was, of course, the retail side. My main few thoughts were, we have a van, we have a warehouse, we have the whole of London on our doorstep. Technically, we count it as an essential business because booze, obviously, in Britain, that's great.
Thank you very much.
I spent a couple of days messaging hundreds of people on Instagram, actually, from wonderful wonderful responses, customers, wholesale customers who did events for us online, shared that. Hundreds of thousands of people must have seen those posts, those stories shared. I mean, even like James Lowe of Lyle's, the wonderful restaurant, one of the two on the world's 50 best in the UK, did a Instagram live thing with their 100 and whatever thousand followers with Tom Oliver. And it was really the gut instinct being like, we've got to do this stuff really quickly, you know? And people, I think, were very, very supportive because they knew that cider of the type we work with was newer anyway, and it was a struggle. You know, I'm sorry to explain this to you, Grant, if so, but, you know, being a cider merchant, it's not like a wine merchant where everything costs a bit more and you get like the house red, the house white, this big old list. It's, you know, the dribs and drabs. So I think the real nature of it meant people were very supportive, and that I think is what has helped this real groundswell.
Well, you've said it there where the kind of the style of ciders you sell. So just bring it back to right to basics. What is fine cider?
It all began actually with, I think, the first thing that really caught my tongue, if you will, and that was very much with my dad as well, was a Yarlington Mill from the one and only Dennis Watkins. The nature of it as a liquid was a whole other thing. And that's where the ball started rolling to very soon after visit people like Tom Oliver. And in those really early days, very nervously or cautiously, ask a couple of makers like Tom Oliver, others where it didn't quite happen, but we did some of their stuff like Simon Day, but when he was back at Once Upon a Tree, we had a label design sorted for that and everything, but never quite happened. That was real, you know, just asking if I can try doing certain things in certain ways of labeling bottles, you know, even buying bloody crown caps and having it, you know, bottled elsewhere and all sorts. And it was a bit of a thought process of what to call it. It was this idea that there's such a difference between some of the elements that can occur in cider to some of the mass market or other side, you know, not to say everything doesn't have its place, but that justifies in its own right having slight separation. You know, you don't try and fight over the name cider. You say there's different elements, you add bits and pieces, new territory, if you will. And almost began with the idea of table cider. You know, it was this idea of putting it with food. Really had cider with lunch in Herefordshire, particularly. That was the real, those are the kind of nugget moment. And that was the kind of thinking about what to call it. And, but fine just seemed to have a bit more going for it in a very conducive kind of natural manner. So, but as far as what actually drinks wise constitutes fine cider, well, that's not down to me, is it?
Wow. Well, you wrote the book on it.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. But so it's, I assume you, it's down to the drinker. So how have you seen the drinkers change over the years since you started to where they are now and the people that are drinking the products that you're selling?
Yeah, I mean, that has been the fascinating one. I mean, again, this is where I can chat to Gabe and everybody else. You probably, you know, Gabe going back, you know, even further than myself, it sort of feels like such distant history 7-8 years ago. And you say, Martin, yeah, I did write a book. I know there's protocol. I do have the ship's bell. I should probably ring that, but didn't quite grab it. But
yeah, we'll get you one.
Yeah, and it was subtitled Understanding as well. So, okay. the drinker, I think in a sense you can, it's not so much looking at the drinker that's shifted. That's almost ancillary in a sense to what has been drunk, if you get what I mean.
Yep.
And there's been lots of things we had to do. Like we began with small bottles, predominantly the half-size champagnes, even stuff that made a real impression. Price stuff was tricky, of course, but and it's been fascinating seeing those swathes and bottles that 5 years ago dribs and drabs would be hard to sell, all of a sudden the appreciation, the demand, the awareness. So whereas the individual sort of portion of a small bottle before was so focused upon, and then we try to leverage that saying, you know, like you've got a small bottle, Oliver's, get a big bottle on your shelf. People can, you know, they know once they have that small one, that small risk, they'll move up, you know, they'll go into that other territory. Now we have a lot of wonderful customers who just deal in the big bottles. Also just, yeah, I say the things that makers can do, that's the most wonderful part of it. The fun that makers can have, or the experiments, the things they can justify doing that previously there would be that pasteurization or that other point of caution. Because how quick is this going to sell? Is it going to sit around for ages? Do I have to make this really accessible for the public? And that actually just reminds me, even in the early days, the first year or two, I still had this weird thought panging in my head. Like, you know, you as a person, you want something to be logical. You're like, why don't people know about this kind of cider? Why is that the case? And you try and you try and understand that and contextualize it, I suppose. But I just always had that thought, like, is there something with it? Is there some like weird mad allergy to one thing that can happen in it that some people have? Is there something else, you know? Is there, you know, what is the reasoning? But that's been fascinating
I'm still asking that question every day. I mean, we're still, although we're considerably further along the journey, there is still a very long way to go. Now, you did obviously, you know, mention the nature of the sort of packaging and style and aesthetic. You've been very kind in sending each of us a cider, three different ciders amongst your portfolio. So we're just going to open those up and have a wee chat about that. Martin, what have you got?
So I have Starvecrow Natural, and this is cider with a Y.
Oh,
but this is a bourbon barrel. So basically, do you want to give us the old sales pitch for this one, bud?
I mean, I'd be interested to see if it still has a slight kind of desiccated coconut thing to it, but Starvecrow is made down in East Sussex with by Ben Walgett, also does Tillingham Wines, wonderful natural winemaker. He has quite a bit of fun with what he does, and the kind of fruit he's working with are not the traditional cider apples. You know, it's similar to some of the fruit you get in the US, that kind of eating dessert side, Bramley, John of Gold. You'll probably see a specific set listed in the text on the side of that. Mm-hmm. The bourbon, of course, that comes in the barrel. They're former bourbon whiskey barrels. And the bourbon point, the charring of the inside of the barrel is the really distinctive thing. So as opposed to, say, whiskey up in Scotland and other factors, you know, it's not an area I know too specifically, but that's the distinctive element that it imparts. And I think there's really interesting things going on this side of the country, on the east of the UK. Now, makers who've been playing around a bit more, and you've talked about and even had some of them on lately. But I found his early experimentation, which he did because his neighbor Steve had an orchard, and Starvecrow is basically a collaboration between them, him, Steve growing, Ben making. They're down near Rye. You can see across the little spire on the top of Rye and its old castle gates, and then through to the sea beyond it, and this amazing kind of yellowy sandstone. These odd spikes, it's old marshland below, or kind of old drained marshes, I believe. But I just love with that natural approach on that fruit, when you're talking less potential alcohol, often slightly softer muted things, you know, by nature of the fruit. I found his things really fascinating. I say his vines weren't ready. He had this neighbor, so he started playing around with these things. And that was the thing that I found really, really fascinating with it.
Well, trying it, one of the reasons I wanted to try it mainly is to see how the bourbon barrel was integrated into the cider. And I mean, it's the first thing you smell. It's a huge barrel character. And I've stirred the glass almost, but you've got this lovely perfumey kind of intensity to it. But like you said, coconut, I thought in my head, it's kind of little, it's kind of green coriander-y. And then you've said coconut, it kind of smells like, if you're a beer person, Sriracha Ace. It's got this real, it's like not quite placeable intensity, but it drinks. It's so smooth. It's got this light prickle of acidity. It's really not what I expected at all. It's a bloody lovely one. What have you got, Gabe?
I have got, sorry, I was just going to say the coconut and the coriander sounds like a Massaman curry, but I presume that's not what you've got in the glass there.
It would go well with it. There you go.
Okay, as a match, probably. Okay, very good. I have got the 2019 Dabernet and Yarlington Malt from the fantastic Greg's Pit from the village of Muchmarkle, just next door to Dimmock. James has been making cider and perry at the property at Greg's Pit for nigh on 30 years now, and has had considerable success and accolade over that time. He's only ever made a very small quantity every year, and he's all about the precision in terms of the quality of the fruit and being of perfect ripeness and sort of knowing exactly what he wants to do with it in these blends. And this is I suspect that it's undergone a bit of Kiev, and we've got a bottle conditioning in here. It's all, it's just all sort of tobacco and leather. There is soft juiciness, but it's not really kind of juicy. It's just like a soft cushion for everyone. It's just like a big hug, basically. Oh, it lovely. Is absolutely, it's just lush. It kind of looks, smells and tastes like that Herefordshire earth. It's just got this wonderful rich vibe going on. Absolutely fab. Grant, what do you think? What have you got?
Well, I've got something pretty different again. I've actually got an ice cider here, Claim by Branland. So that's I think we've explained Ice Rider before, right?
Yeah, we've done it enough, I think.
I mean, I guess it might be, I don't know how specifically this one's made. Felix, you might know, well, I'm sure you do know. You can maybe explain how this is made in terms of the freezing of the fruit or the juice, or, you know, what's the process that Brandland specifically use?
Yeah, well, the key way in which this specific one claim differs from your standard ice cider, it's very much their own creation. It's not fitting to the Quebecanese kind of standard, the set of rules. And if for most ciders, for example, you would be using just a sort of 20%, the first 20% that thaws of the must, you know, when you freeze the juice, if you're doing it that way around, rather than leaving fruit on the tree to get very cold and dehydrate as such, to produce that concentrated juice when pressed. If you are doing the method where you freeze the juice and then thaw it, so the water is retained in ice and you are getting this really rich, you know, juice that comes off at a slightly lower freezing point. Often, for example, say that might be the first 20%. That's the case I know for various Brandland things. This takes the sort of 20 up to about 50% of the thaw. So it's much lighter. The alcohol is that slight bit lower than some ice, so it's not too low, but it's a softer, more floral creation. It's a slightly more sort of summery one. I love this as a sort of pre-dinner thing, a little glass of it, or throughout summer, it's great. And I love that idea as well, that you can take a ice cider and a slight different incarnation. It's not quite the ciderkin version of ice cider. You're not adding water, whatever else, but you're using that same process, choosing to go about it in a slightly different way, and as a result, create something quite different. And when it was young, particularly, this was very floral on the nose. It's a really intriguing one, as this sort of slightly dessert-like thing, but very floral. And certain situations, it will really sing. So, you know, it put up against certain foods, it, you know, can be challenging, depends what you've had to drink before. In the right situations, when it really opens up, it's sort of subtle for an ice cider in that way, but it's got lovely little details in that subtlety. Mm.
Go on, pros and cons, Grant. Tell us what's good, what's bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, the colour is a lot. It's not as rich and as deep as some ice ciders that you see, which I was surprised about. I don't think I've seen an ice cider that's as light as that, and it doesn't have that same sort of caramel punch. But yeah, it is a nice kind of honey and sort of, you know, the sort of meadowy smell, as opposed to just having that kind of burnt sugar hit almost. And the acidity that's on it is really beautiful, and again a sort of higher acidity than I have had before with an ice cider from Eden and even the Pilton ice cider. So yes, it is. I think you said it's more of a summer ice cider, which is great, you know, because I do feel like having an ice cider is definitely something you pour by the fire in winter. That's how I would see it, and that's probably how I would drink it. But this is definitely, it's super refreshing, you know, and really light, and I really like it. It's
beautiful. That acidity you mentioned is a really kind of characteristic thing for Brandland.
Right.
The nature of the varieties and also the way that they go about, you know, what they're looking for in it. I really like that because it stops it being just the sweetness. There's a kind of real counterpoint of the acidity, which often can actually mean their ice cider can go great with food. And as you go through kind of the range, if this is on the lightest side, as you say, you go darker in tone until you get to like the Belle de Boskop, the single variety they did the other year that was aged in a single oak barrel for 3 years. I was almost delicious. A kind of dark mahogany in color. Yeah, it was absolutely surreal. The little droplets in your teeth just still there, like bursting out. And I really like that. They are starting to do more and more aging in what they do. They've got a fascinating project coming up with a lot of limited releases, which, you know, Andreas, I'm sure most of you have met him. He's, you know, fascinating guy for these things. And I really, really like that they're doing that. They are sort of doubling down on the elements that are really, really, really fascinating what they do, in relative isolation, you know, in some ways. And it's really fascinating.
So that this one hasn't been aged and hasn't been in any barrel?
No, this is, you know, this is the youthful, juicy, super light side. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Love it.
So, Felix, you've very kindly provided us with three very different ciders, different styles, different fruit, different processes, different countries in the case of the Brännland there in Sweden. How do you and how have you gone about choosing brands that, you know, or makers, let's say, to have as part of your portfolio? What's the approach? I was going to say, does brand aesthetic have a point to play at the start? And given that Mr. Oliver was at the very top of your list, and knowing Martin's thoughts on Tom's early branding, you were obviously able to see beyond purely brand alone. But what is it that you look for that has that magic that you want to champion and celebrate?
It's an interesting question, because obviously that's one that you kind of ask yourself a lot, or underlies, you know, it's always there in the background, I suppose. And it's really fascinating, boundaries between, particularly in previous years, a slight sense of responsibility in not limiting to your own sense of taste, but at the same time, you know, to do justice to what cider can be in the really good makers out there, still trying to sort of compete against yourself to strive for what is good. You know, it's quite easy otherwise to settle on what your palate might think. And it's a really hard process to judge how you show the wider spectrum, how you judge something to be good in the wider view. Mm. And I mean, yeah, the aesthetic side was mostly initially just because it wasn't there at all, you know, to shut Martin up and satiate that anger.
Oh, thanks very much. You've done us all a service there.
Oh, he's louder than ever, isn't he?
Well, they've given me a fucking megaphone. Here we are. You've come in tonight on your boat with the most fucking London accent I've heard you the whole time. You've been like, yeah, I'm here with my Bill, Isham Scheider. But the thing that really frustrated me about Oliver's, and I think you've nailed it with the brand now, is the quality of the product. I had to beg people to drink it, because it's one of the best things I've ever drank. And it looked crap. It looked crap. So I like that you went, hang on, no, I can work with this. And you've got it to a point now where all his labels look lovely, and the quality's matched, but within, without, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know the, particularly from the outside as well, the appearances and that side of what we do as well might stand out quite prominently, but exactly that. The whole point is that the liquid itself deserves it, you know?
It's not
that we want to put all that effort and attention into labels, into the appearance, into the way it's talked about, discussed. It's fundamentally all coming back to the idea that the liquid deserves to be understood. So if we put a ton of effort into that and try to do that in a way that we, to the best of our abilities, can think, you know, can represent certain things and help shift and change what is thought to be cider and what appreciation and awareness exists for these kind of drinks, that's fundamentally it. I know it might be a little bit like wood for the trees in that sense at times, you know, but it's been so many layers of proof of concept of, you know, really, again, Gabe, I know we've talked about this before. It's a little bit like trying to sort of scout ahead, you know, you test things. You also know that at the end of the day, if it comes back round and, you know, really traditional farm gate cider or something that is labeled as Old Oliver's, whatever, actually gets appreciated, then great, you know. But it's trying to say, of the tools at your disposal and in the environment and the world that we have, given everything that's happened, you know, in taste and in aesthetics, in the likes of craft beer and natural wine, make the most of what we can to help cider as a whole of this caliber be understood and be spread around. Yeah.
Felix, thank you so much for coming in and having a chat with us and talking through your sort of thinking and ideology and all approach to things cider. What, just as a sort of final wrap, what are you looking forward to over the course of the next 12 months? What's going to be exciting?
I'm just looking forward to, I mean, I'm really interested to see how this summer shapes up.
Yeah.
you know, I talked at the start a little bit about how stuff's changed, actually. And going into the pandemic, we were like 95% wholesale, mostly pubs, restaurants, even places like Tate Modern. And that all shut basically across 2 days, you know. And I had a couple of months without a day of weekend, you know, getting everything flowing with retail, everything. It's just so glorious now to be focusing back on the wholesale side, you know, so fundamentally. And yet we still grew a bit over 50% across last year, you know. And as I say, the awareness, it's just a lovely feeling and sensation. And I just can't wait to see what Cider Makers create as a result. You know, the kind of high coming out of all this, fingers crossed that all runs smoothly. New makers as well. It feels like makers go in waves. You know, there's the old school, the likes of James Marsden at Greg's Pit and Tom Oliver, those sort of two decade, you know, ones, a lot of them stemming from the likes of Gene Noel. Then there's been this last 3, 5, 6 year, you know, wave of kind of people like Finder Foster and Wilding. And you start seeing interesting things and hearing of bits, you know, near you, Grant, or not necessarily, but, you know, in your neck of the woods in Scotland, there's some really fascinating things happening. Back last year, between lockdowns, we went to go to Riga and Latvia for the Baltic Cider Awards. And again, just things occurring in such a short span of time. Really fascinating. Things of uniqueness. The paradise apples they work with, the sort of crabs of our world. But again, unique kind of properties and all sorts going on. So it feels like that wave is pushing along, and that that's what I'm excited to see. What other stuff pops up, new things, new people, new articles, new places.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. It's going to be a fab year, and we're going to drink our way through it, I suspect. Felix, where do people need to head to in order to learn more about the Fine Cider Company and the things that you're working on? What's the website? What are the social media handles?
The website is www.thefinecider.company. We're at fine_cider on Instagram. We don't really bother with anything else anymore, to be honest. That Facebook thing.
There really is no point, is there?
It's just too much stuff to do. You know, it's the same, like, you know, the thing I'm not looking forward to be like things like trade shows return. We never really bothered doing them anyway. You know, it's a sort of weird version of social dynamics rather than stuff, you know, spreading into new territory, perhaps. But keep your eyes out, you know, just Instagram is a great source, but otherwise keep an eye on the makers as much as anything, really, you know.
Absolutely.
Various articles and bits and pieces coming along as well. So as you guys have talked about and championed, there's various sources for that, place like Pellicle and Burham and others who really shaping up wonderfully. I can't wait to see what they do over the coming
and
few
now
years.
The new cider review as well.
Yes, of course. Yeah, Adam has got a wonderful wonderfully perceptive palate there. And James was involved in the judging earlier as well. And it's all too good.
You fucker.
Everyone's involved in the judging. Well, on that bombshell, there we go. Felix, thank you so much for joining us here at the Nutricider Hotel. I hope you've had as much fun as we have had. Thanks for the drinks. Cheers to you. Safe sailing on the great ship HMS Cider. Cheers to you. See you again soon.
See you.
And to wrap up things here this week at the Nutricider Hotel, we've got some of your listener questions. Martin, what have we got?
Well, Gabe, when I told you that, I actually lied a bit. I asked our listeners a question again, and I feel like I've done this the last few times, so just save us all the fucking hassle and do a SpeakPipe. SpeakPipe.com /Nutricider Hotel. Just say fucking anything. But I posted, where's the best pub/bar/drinking establishment for cider near you? Now, we got a few, so I'm just going to reel through them. But Southsiders said in Chicago, the Northman Riverwalk right on the Chicago River is a great spot. Timothy AJ said, Mr. West, Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Have to fucking fly there, .. So, okay, yeah. And then
you have to fly there wherever you are?
It sounds like he's not near there. So he's like, I have to fucking fly there.
Like, I see. I'm just more confused. The wording of it was really confusing. So, Timothy, if you can tell us where you are, that would help out. So, Eleanor in DC said, gotta go with Ancho, but Capital Cider House is top of the list too. And then...
Are we just going to accept that?
No!
I feel like I should stand up for Eleanor on her behalf.
Martin called himself out for that voice a week or two ago. So,
Eleanor, we at the Neutral Cider Hotel, we wish to distance ourselves from the accent that Martin had just put on there and just not portray our thoughts or feelings towards the wonderful world of cider and American heritage. Thank you.
Just like the idea of listening in going, again?
Totally. You like the idea of that. See, Martin, most people would dislike the idea of that. Like Gabe and I.
Yeah, no,
well, to a regular contributor, who especially when you've just gone, oh, just do a speak pipe for us, will you, please?
Yeah, but then we can hear her voice. I'll tell you what, Eleanor, send us a speak pipe and prove you don't sound like that. That's the gambit. Yeah. I could be bang on.
Touché. So, touché.
Yeah, there you go.
That's quite threatening. Can you,
but also, yeah, it is a bit threatening. Lovely. See if you're going to do an impression of Martin.
Yeah. Ooh, I like it.
She just goes, and it's correct. Yeah. So, guys, let's throw it to the group here. I'm going to throw this to Scott first. Scott, where you're from, New Orleans, what are the best drinking establishments for cider?
Your grasp of America is impressive, Martin. Honestly, cider, there is a cidery in my neighborhood called Bivouac. So that's the closest one. They make some pretty good ciders. Honestly, though, I don't find cider much in bars. I actually just buy it. I don't find it very often in pubs or bars. I just have to go to bottle shops and buy it.
So what bottle shops would you go to in your area then?
There's a bottle shop near me called North Park Bottle Shop. North Park Bottle Craft.
Okay. Oh, well, that's as many words as you could put in a title.
That is not,
like, brand 101
throwing words at the fridge.
Yeah. Bottlecraft in North Park. That's it. Bottlecraft
in North Park. You can get the finest aged Perry's from Oliver's in Herefordshire for only $30. So, Grant, in Scotland, where's a good drinking establishment near you? And also, let's say this, where would you go if you could in the UK kind of thing?
Near me, I'm looking forward to Futtle Brewery reopening. We can walk there from our house. It's a brewery, so they've got their own beers. They've got a great selection of ciders as well, and some nice wines. And since we moved here, I've not really been able to go to a local. So to be honest, here I'm looking forward to anything, but specifically Futtle. In Scotland in general, where would I go? It just feels like so long since I've been able to do it.
Places.
There's the Thornwood in Glasgow. Let's go to the Thornwood in Glasgow.
If you're able, yeah.
Yeah, if you're able to.
Do you say able?
If you're able to go.
So
able.
I mean, we've just rang the bell as many times as we can.
In a minute.
So, Gabe, where's near you, and where would you go to if you could just like be out in the rest of the UK? And I'll extend this for you as well. One for anywhere in the world, because I know you're a slightly travelled individual man.
Individual man.
That was the most backhanded compliment, or I don't know, like backhanded.
It's just bonkers, aren't I? I'm just on a roll.
Totally bonkers.
Slightly travelled. I just feel like well travelled is something that, like, that's a compliment. It makes you sound like a sort of rounded individual. A person who's educated in the ways of the world has seen a lot of things, slightly traveled.
You've just stepped outside your comfort zone and
you've gone everywhere and you've ordered from like the restaurant that they've got everything written in English. That's slightly traveled. That like sweet and sour. We'll have that every time.
I've been to McDonald's in every country. Yeah. That's what you mean.
You're a slightly traveled individual, man.
That's the name of the episode for sure, by the way.
Gabe, you're a slightly old individual, man. Where would you be drinking Perry from a can?
Ah, good question. Well, first of all, I'd like to go down and support the Cider Box in Bristol, which I still haven't actually gone to like drink on a Saturday afternoon. And I look forward to doing that, to supporting Dan and supporting cider in Bristol.
Well, maybe.
I'd also like to...
Maybe we can cut you off there. That's the end of your travels. So I was going to say, we should actually go down there and have a drink and record it and see what happens. You and I.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? So the Cider Box in Bristol, it would be a first sort of port of call. I'd like to try some more of the old school cider pubs as well. There's only like a handful truly left. And I think I mentioned the Ye Olde Cider Bar down in Newton Abbot. Mm. And there's another one called the Square and Compass down in Dorset. I think it's near Worth McTravers that I've heard about. Never been. If I do a bit of a camping trip down to Dorset, I'll give that a try. And from an international perspective, two places. First of all, the Mutari Inn, which was my local pub in New Zealand, where I used to live. New Zealand's oldest pub, actually.
Aww.
Amazing cider from the cider maker that I worked for, the Peckhams, and also great local beer, including some actual like hand pull, like real ale, which an English guy, Martin Townsend, he brews down there. Awesome place and experience. And a little closer... Well, in Norway, so it's a little closer than New Zealand, I suppose.
You are slightly travelled.
Yes. The Cyderhuset in Balestrand and Sørgenfjord. Norwegian listeners, you can give me marks out of 10 for my Norwegian accent. Has got possibly the most spectacular view of any cider place in the fjords out west. Pretty lush. So yeah, there's lots of amazing places and we look forward to getting back to seeing them sometime soon.
Yeah, well, for me, Bristol, it's got to be Cider Box. Dan's set up like such a lovely little place there that it is fucking, it's just, I went there when it opened and it was that kind of, still anxious, not as anxious as I am now, but that anxious kind of new COVID thing. But he dealt with it really well. And I mean, the range there, there's a lot of like casual stuff. Nice stuff in bottles. So you could have a pint or a sharer. It's wonderful for that. The Orchard Inn, I've never been to in Bristol. So that is like a must rectify. I'm really sorry, guys. Bristol's kind of one of those, for me, it's the exact opposite end of Bristol. So I'd have to either drive there or be on the bus for 7 days. 7 days. But
absolutely. You're right. Sam and Steph running the Orchard Inn have... not only they got like an amazing selection of mainstream ciders, but also like these bag in box ciders, including a healthy range from Hex, Martin's favorite cider of the moment. But they actually keep it in the cool cellar. They do look after it. It's the right temperature. It's like those ciders in tip top condition you want them to be.
Well, and then finally, if it's going to be anywhere. I've been there, I've blended, I've hung out, but I'm waiting to see what Little Pomona's tap room is in when it's in full swing, because that for me is one of those where I'm like, you look at it and it's just gorgeous. And it's almost that kind of like cider has this rustic kind of farmyard thing. They've nailed and gone beyond a lot of breweries, in my opinion, of what they've presented there. And I can just imagine, I can't wait till fucking Disco Nuvo and stuff like that are released and it's a party. Like, it just feels like that's the place where I'm going to have the most memorable cider events this year.
Could I also just sort of tag on to there? You've reminded me that something that seems to be happening is that a number of cider makers are opening up tap rooms, and Little Pomona a touch ahead of the game. But we've got Iford just outside of Bath. Mm-hmm. The Iford cider, they're opening.
Their stuff's lovely as well. Like, so absolutely drinkable. Like, easy.
I saw Joe the other day, and he said that they've been playing with loads of experimental stuff. There's loads of barrel aged stuff, all sorts of crazy things. That will be another fun trip out. Napton Cider up in Warwickshire, they've just opened up a tap room space as well to get people in there. And also, we shouldn't forget the wonderful Tom at Rebel Root. They've got their cider tap in Bolney in West Sussex as well. So there are the number of places to try awesome tasting cider with knowledgeable, fun and passionate people are just growing and growing and growing. It is lush.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Well, there we go. That wraps up our listener questions, listener answers. Maybe we should call that a section rather than listener questions. Listener answers here at the Neutral Cider Hotel.
If you enjoy our podcast and want to help, please spread the word about the Neutral Cider Hotel. Tell your friends about it and encourage them to listen. You can also follow, rate and review us on your favorite podcast app. It really, really does help. Please find and follow us on social media. We are at Neutral Cider Hotel on Instagram and Facebook and Neutral Cider Pod on Twitter. As always, you can visit us on our website to listen online or share episodes at www.neutralciderhotel.com. Lastly, please reach out and leave us a voicemail with your questions or comments, Eleanor, at speakpipe.com/neutralciderhotel.
So there we go. That wraps up another week here at the Nigel Cider Hotel. Thanks once again to Felix Nash from the Fine Cider Company for joining us and sharing some sensational ciders and his views on the world of cider. We'll hear, listen, see, all of the above. What? Next time.
Yes, oh keep going, God. Baby.
You've been drinking for more than 12 hours now.
It's been a long day.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, our dear listeners. We will see you next time. Cheers.